So welcome to the November 26th, 2020 edition of Guelph's favorite weekly breakfast meeting. This is being broadcast from treaty territory of the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation, established under Treaty Number 3 in 1792, which has also been inhabited by the Neutra people. This is land that is part of the Dish with One Spoon Covenant, which was established between Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabeg nations, and applies to all other nations that have come to this land thereafter. Okay, moving on to our topic this week. I would say that Guelph has had a really interesting decade when it comes to voting security. For a lot of people, I know the first thing that comes to mind when you bring that up is the conservative robocall scandal of 2011. And after that breach in public confidence, Guelph City Council voted to implement an online advanced voting option in its 2014 municipal election, only to remove it again before the 2018 election. There's been vigorous debate over the past 10 years about how the existence of the internet and other advancing technologies should interact with our voting methods to address issues of security, accessibility, cost, and more. Meanwhile, now in the United States, we have controversy sweeping the country as a large percentage of the population has lost the public trust, even in a mail-in voting process. And many people are fully convinced that the election was stolen by Dominion voting systems. It is in this context that we now find ourselves in the midst of a city staff-led review on remote voting methods. So today we're going to have hopefully a really good discussion about that with our special guests. We're going to start off with Jennifer Slater, the city's manager of information, privacy, and elections. She's going to give us an overview of the city's voting methods review. And then we're also going to hear from Dr. Cameron Shelley, who's a lecturer at the University of Waterloo in the Department of Systems Design Engineering. We also have Dr. Alexander Essex on the call. And he's an associate professor at Western University who specializes in cybersecurity and cryptography. Thanks, all of you, for joining us today. For everybody else, I just want you to please remember that if you want to ask a question or provide your opinion throughout the meeting, you can just let me know in the chat. I'll either call on you or I'll read your message out loud. You should be able to send me a private message if you want through Zoom, just in the case that you don't want other people to see what your message is for whatever reason. And if you happen to be joining by phone or the chat is inaccessible to you for whatever reason, then I will make special open time for people at about 8:45. So I think without further ado, I'm going to hand things over to Jennifer. I'm also going to get your slides on the screen so you can present for us. Feel free to take us away.
All right, thank you very much, Dustin. And I'll maybe just start off with a bit of a thank you to Councillors Alt and Gordon, as well as Dustin for organizing and allowing me to be here today. And I don't have too many slides. I just wanted to take a few minutes maybe to run through a little bit about the context and the intent of the engagement, and certainly happy to answer any questions as we go through. So if you want to move to the next slide, I'll talk a little bit about, just some context, what the history of the project is, kind of why are we seeing this now. I'll provide, a few timelines, where we are in the engagement and what we're working towards, so you have a sense of where we're going. I'll talk a little bit about our engagement kind of statistics and how we're seeing response to date. And I'll just point to some resources where anyone can find more information as well. So for context, I just like to maybe start with a bit a kind of term, just so I don't think we talk about voting methods all that often. So just a sense that when we talk about voting methods, we're talking about how you cast your ballot. I think my colleague Dylan was here earlier in the year, and he did talk about mentioned that I would be coming back to talk about voting systems and voting methods. So I should preface that voting systems is, it's how you mark your ballot. Voting methods is how you cast your ballot. And I'll mention maybe in a minute why we're not talking about voting systems kind of at this stage. But, you know, effectively, oh, sorry for cutting. So effectively, we're looking at three remote voting options as part of the engagement. The big thing for us, we are engaging more on the remote side to hear what people think in that aspect, in the sense that we are still planning to offer in-person voting. That won't be changing. It's more the remote considerations, appreciating there are always, you know, concerns around offering anything that is kind of an unmonitored voting option. And we wanted to see how the community feels about those options. So our role here as the city clerk really is to kind of sit back and listen. We aren't, you know, we have provided, maybe I'll mention when I talk about resources, some kind of neutral information about each of the options, but our role really is, you know, under the Municipal Elections Act, our role is as returning officer, we're meant to be kind of neutral and partial, and considering every option that is available before we make a recommendation to council. Just in terms of context, I think it's important to kind of say why we're considering remote options, appreciating there are always, you know, additional concerns around security and integrity with remote options. You know, the role of the city clerk really is to play a bit of a balancing act, if I can put it that way. You know, our role is to uphold the principles of the Municipal Elections Act in terms of security and integrity of the election, while also balancing the ability and the reality that a lot of people aren't able to get to an in-person voting location. So appreciating there are always, you know, considerations with those remote options, but we have to balance security and integrity with the idea that everyone should have the ability to cast their ballot if they're able to and if they're eligible to. So we certainly know there are groups in our community who may find an in-person voting location less accessible. And I use that term broadly. You know, we always consider individuals in our community who have, whether it's, you know, mobility limitations or, you know, specific requirements that if they're able to vote from their home would be more easily met. The reality is we also have a lot of eligible voters who live outside of the city of Guelph. To qualify to vote, you need to either be an owner or a tenant of property. And in many cases, we have owners of property who live outside of the city who may not be able to drive here on the same election day as in their municipality. And, you know, certainly COVID-19 has, it's kind of the reality that we are working in right now. I'm very hopeful that we are through this by 2022, which is our next municipal election. But obviously very mindful that, and keeping an eye on how others are running in-person voting options, and the reality that should we be still in a COVID-related pandemic situation, there will be an increasing number of people who will be less comfortable with health considerations for perhaps themselves or people they live with or work with, that they wouldn't be quite so comfortable coming to an in-person voting location. Yeah, and I just prefacing that I did mention that we won't be talking about voting systems, unfortunately. I don't know if any of you had seen Bill 218 come forward. It was introduced by the provincial government in late October, and it made a few changes to the Municipal Elections Act. The main one that really did impact this engagement was the removal of the ability of municipalities to offer a ranked ballot election. So it effectively took the ability for us to even discuss that option off the table. So we have removed consideration of voting systems. It's certainly something we were prepared to engage on, and we'll be looking forward to any future changes for 2026. And then maybe I'll just mention, just for kind of good scope of what we are, you know, how we're taking in feedback for the engagement. You know, we started off, and I'll maybe work through, actually, maybe if you want to go to the next slide, I can integrate that into the timelines. So kind of the scope of our engagement, on November 9th, we opened engagement with an online survey. And then that week, very shortly after, we conducted a telephone survey, which is more statistically significant and kind of balanced in terms of City of Guelph representation, which has been completed now. So we have the telephone survey, we have an online survey that's open from November 9th until December 4th there. And, you know, certainly appreciating online with the kind of move to online engagement with the COVID environment. We know that might not be the most easy to use option for everyone in our community. So, you know, our emails are available, phone numbers, if people want to call, email, or even write a letter to the city clerk's office, we're more than happy to receive feedback in any way that works best for someone. So with the opening of engagement on November 9th, we then, actually last Wednesday, we had an open house and panel talk. You know, and I'll preface it by saying that Dr. Essex was actually part of the panel, and it was a great conversation from a variety of perspectives. So I would encourage, and I'll mention in the resources section where you can find that, the video for the panel talk. December 4th, our engagement closes. February 4th will be when the report with recommendations for council goes live. And then on February 21st, we have our city council meeting to discuss the report. The one thing maybe I should kind of preface, you'll see the legislative deadline there. For a decision by council. That is actually something that also just changed with Bill 218. So originally we were planning our timelines a little bit earlier in the fall for this engagement. However, you know, with the pause for kind of COVID-19, the close of engagement for a period of time over the summer, we moved the timelines into November, December. But we were working towards a timeline of May 1st, 2021. So previously the Municipal Elections Act required that a decision on voting methods be made in the year prior to the election by May 1st, and now it's changed to the year of the election in May 1st. So, you know, at this point we were already live with our engagement. The bill didn't receive royal assent until November 20th, which is last Friday. So we had planned our engagement with the 2021 timeline in mind. But I will say, I think there are a couple of advantages in kind of keeping with the original timeline, in the sense that we have, you know, 4 weeks of engagement. We're seeing pretty good response rates. But also there's a bit of a sense that when you're getting that close, and May 1st, 2022 is when, members of council can be putting in their nomination papers. So you're getting very close to an election mindset and an election context, which from both a staff and a council perspective is a little bit close. And it does give us, I think, the earlier we are able to make that decision, it does give us certainly more flexibility to make sure that, you know, whatever equipment we need to be procuring and moving forward with, that it's still available, because we are working with the same vendors, there's very few vendors in this environment, as, you know, any other municipality conducting an election on the exact same day. So we do still plan to move forward for, you know, an early timeline next year for a council decision, but that was a recent change for us, the May 1st, 2022. I just thought I'd mention a couple of kind of response rates that we've seen so far. We are in our third week of engagement. We do have 1 week left. Our telephone survey, a standard number for us is to reach out for 600 responses as a representative response for our community. So far we've had 591 online surveys completed to date, 20 average views of the open house panel lives. And I will say that was, you know, lower than we had hoped for. But we have seen kind of good post views, now that we have the video link up as well. So we did post that video link on Monday this week. And so far we've had 908, Facebook views and 36 views directly through YouTube. And good social media reach, over 42,000 people kind of engaging and seeing any posts that we've had on Facebook or Twitter, which is, quite promising for us. And then just the last slide, I'll mention, you know, where you can find out more, and then obviously happy to answer any questions. You can check out the project page. That is kind of the one-stop shop with the link to the open house. We do have additional, like I mentioned, those kind of neutral materials where we tried to provide a little bit of information without opinion. So those things include, you know, an overview of process, you know, what would it look like if we offered vote by mail, vote by phone or internet voting? What would those, you know, systems cost? General questions and answers and kind of opportunities and drawbacks of each of the options. So I'll point out probably the best place to check out if you're looking for more information. You can watch the open house link direct on YouTube or through our Facebook page, and encouraging anyone to complete the survey before December 4th at haveyoursay.guelph.ca/voting-methods. And that's the best way for us to kind of hear and get a sense of what systems or what processes would our community trust. That's all I have prepared, but obviously, very happy and seeing kind of questions pop up in the chat. Very happy to answer any questions.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you, Jennifer. And sorry, I was lagging behind you on the slide change there for a little bit. I had some tech difficulties on my end. But yes, thank you for your presentation and overview. Just for time's sake, I want to keep things moving right along. We're going to hear hopefully from Dr. Shelley right now, if you want to hop in.
There we go. There, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
Where are you joining?
From my home, my little study with my cats wondering what I'm doing.
Okay. Great. Well, I'll let you take it away.
As usual. Thanks. Okay. Well, I thought I made a submission to the council a few years ago. It was 2017, I think, about my concerns, I guess, with it. So I thought I would just sort of read a couple of excerpts from that to point to some things that maybe are worth our attention. So with your permission, I'll go ahead and do that. So the one excerpt was on about government commitment in online voting. So governments often take a transactional view of e-voting. They set out some rules and make a payment, and a vendor supplies the election. On the contrary, adoption of e-voting is a big commitment of resources. Suitable voters list must be prepared and maintained. Also, supervision of the vendor requires significant expertise and resources, as the Dutch government discovered to its surprise. So electronic voting machines were adopted for all levels of government in the Netherlands in the late 1980s. It's kind of vote counting back then, but it became more ambitious as years went on. By 2006, 90% of the votes in the country were cast using the Dutch-built NEDAP Groenendaal ES3B voting computer system. After 2004, citizens living abroad were permitted to cast votes on the system via the internet. In 2006-07, a grassroots campaign entitled, and forgive my Dutch, "We vertrouwen stemcomputers niet," which means "we do not trust voting computers," demonstrated that the ES3B system was seriously flawed and easily hacked and manipulated. The situation arose because the Dutch government had not acquired and maintained adequate resources or expertise to oversee their voting system. Dutch regulations were inadequate, and voting machines that passed their technical requirements remained significantly insecure. Furthermore, complete dependence of the government on private providers left it open to pressure from those providers. So in 2005, it became unclear whether or not Groenendaal, which supplied the system software, would continue operations. Realizing that they might be left with a system they could likely not operate or maintain, the Dutch Electoral Council advised the government to reconsider its relationship with the company. Feeling its business interests in jeopardy, the company replied by blackmailing the government, threatening to cease cooperation if the government did not agree to its demands. For example, it demanded that a computer expert and member of We Vertrouwen Stemcomputers Niet be kept off a commission that the government proposed to set up to review its electoral arrangements, obviously fearing a negative assessment. It also suggested quid pro quo. So this is from an email sent to the government by the head of the provider. The ministry buys shares in our company at a reasonable price, and we will still cooperate during the next election. That is the imminent provincial elections at that time. Shortly before those elections, apparently unsatisfied with the government's response, the company had emailed the Electoral Council saying, "I have ordered my employees to halt all activity until we have received an answer that is acceptable to us." The Dutch government struck two commissions of inquiry into its voting system. The commission tasked with reforming the election system examined the alternatives and identified paper balloting as the preferred option. In 2008, the Dutch Parliament instituted a national moratorium on the use of computer voting machines and readopted paper and pencil balloting. So the reason I raise that example is to underline that it's a significant commitment of a government to oversee elections or voting, rather, even if they are provided by a private vendor. And then the other remarks I wanted to make were about recounts. So I'll proceed with that. In the Ward 3 contest of Guelph's 2014 municipal election, June Hoffman won a place in council over Craig Chamberlain by 5 votes. Given the closeness of the result, a recount was conducted and came to exactly the same conclusion. The process was described in the city's press release as follows. As per the Municipal Election Act, the ballots were recounted in the same manner in which they were counted on October 27th. Guelph's city clerk re-entered the online ballots, and city staff inserted the advanced in-person and election day ballots into the same tabulators used at the Ward 3 voting locations. In fact, the clerk's use of the term ballot and recount is confusing in an important way. Online ballots and in-person ballots are not the same sort of thing in this case. Thus, recounts are not the same sort of thing here either, and that is problematic. So to clarify, note that the term ballot can mean two different things. So consider the following sentences. The voter put his ballot in the ballot box. So in that case, a ballot is a piece of paper. Then another sentence, the voter cast her ballot for mayor. So in that case, ballot means a vote, right? Something that is the something accomplished by filling out a ballot. In the first sense, a ballot is something with a list of candidates' names on it, like a piece of paper or some list on the surface of an iPad or a computer screen, that the voter alters through interactions like making pencil marks or taps and swipes, if it's an iPad. In the second case, a ballot is a vote that a voter means to cast for a candidate by means of these interactions. So note that, like all such systems, the e-voting system used in Guelph produces no ballots in the first sense. When a voter presses the surface of an iPad, say using an e-voting app, the app interprets this action as a vote for a candidate and then transmits this interpretation over the internet to a computer that stores it. That interpretation, that is the vote, is then used in counting and recounting purposes, processes. So when the city clerk said that in-person ballots were recounted, he meant actual ballots. However, when he said that online ballots were recounted, he meant votes as interpreted by the e-voting system. The e-voting system contains no record of what its users were shown or did to produce the vote in question. To see what the difference this distinction makes, consider the purpose of a recount of actual ballots as understood traditionally. The point of recounts is to ensure that the intentions of voters were honored. Since the intentions of voters are reflected in their ballots, recounts have always required that ballots be re-examined to check that they had been interpreted properly. Running paper ballots through a voting tabulator is meant to perform such a check. In addition, everyone of sufficient age likely recalls the notorious hanging Chad scenes during the recounting of ballots in several Florida counties during the 2000 U.S. presidential elections. Although the process may have looked silly, and was ridiculed in the press, re-examination of ballots has always been the method adopted in recounts to ensure that voters' intentions are correctly interpreted and respected. Because of the lack of actual ballots, the Guelph recount of online ballots, as it was said, of 2014 was in no way an attempt to see that the will of online voters was correctly interpreted and respected. Instead, the votes as interpreted by the e-voting machine were assumed to be correct. The test only showed that the system got the same answer both times it added up the votes in its records. In other words, the recount shows only that the e-voting system can add reliably. While this information is reassuring, and we would certainly want that from an e-voting system, it has never been the purpose of recounts before. So here I'll quote from the BC committee's report to the BC government from 2014, which summarizes this issue. So due to the nature of how internet ballots are cast, the concept of a recount under an internet voting system shifts from a reconsideration of each ballot that was cast to an audit of the integrity of the system and processes by which those ballots were cast. This is a fundamental change to the way stakeholders currently view the process. So put another way, e-voting changes the meaning of a recount from a reconsideration of actual ballots to an exercise in arithmetic. One consequence of this situation is that the outcomes of recounts of each type must be interpreted differently. In a traditional recount, if it is conducted properly, there is a chance that the vote total for each candidate could change from the original count. This is because some ballots may be reinterpreted. However, in an e-voting recount, if it is conducted properly, there is little or no chance that the vote total for each candidate may change. After all, no actual ballots exist to be reinterpreted. The only matter left is addition, which does not change. So in the Guelph recount of 2014, as far as the recount of electronic votes was concerned, June Hoffman need not have worried. An identical outcome was assured. Many voters will be surprised to learn that e-votes are not equal to regular votes, and for this reason cannot change election results and recounts. That is because the innovation has been made quietly without public discussion. So I don't think it's appropriate to make such an important change without proper public consultation, and which is what the municipality would be doing if it adopted e-voting at this time. All right, so that was the those were the excerpts I wanted to read, and I will leave it at that. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Dr. Shelley. I think that's a really good start to a framing of kind of some issues with internet voting in particular. So we have a whole broad discussion ahead of us that I hope a lot of people will be participating in. Not just about internet voting, but also about mail and phone voting delivery methods. So I'm going to jump into this really great big pile of questions that have been submitted to this meeting. And I'm going to start with a couple of the questions I received in advance. One was from Ken McKay, and it said verbatim here, much of the current efforts seem to be aimed at improving bureaucracy. This is important, but sometimes the improvements tend to reduce democracy. How can we address the democracy issue with suitable emphasis? It's a bit of a broad question, but I pose it to Jennifer and to Cameron and Alex, if you also wanted to jump in.
Maybe if I can kick off, and certainly happy to respond or kind of hear from Dr. Essex and Dr. Shelley as well. I that's certainly a very poignant question, and maybe the best way for me to kind of answer that is really the intent of the discussion around remote voting methods is perhaps less of an internal consideration and more of a voter experience and a voter service expectation. So the real impetus for us in having this conversation is to understand, what does our community trust? What does our community feel is secure? And what method is, going to help enable everyone in our community who is eligible to be able to cast their ballot in the best way? So, the intent is perhaps less internal focusing and more, at least from the city clerk's office perspective, what is going to be the best voter experience for eligible voters in 2022, and how can we best provide for that? So, we moved to a recommendation, I think, in 2017 prior to the 2018 election, with a recommendation based on our experience in 2014. And I think we really learned that to make the best decision for our community is to have a much broader engagement as we're doing now, so that we can get a much broader range of perspectives on each of the options available, so that we're, I think, better prepared to speak to what would be in the best interest of the community for 2022.
Hey, thank you, Jennifer. And now Cameron or Alex, any input there?
Oh, well, if I may, yeah, I think certainly some form of remote or absentee balloting is, indispensable. So, I mean, the question is really, which form is suitable given what people want and expect, as Jennifer said. So online voting is, as she pointed out, very accessible, certainly to some people, and for an audience that for whom attending a polling station is either not feasible or inconvenient in some way. So that's a consideration. That's one of the main advantages of online voting. How it would work sort of as a, I think that sort of maybe relates to the issue of how it sort of is a promotes democratic virtues. It was a very open question, so I'm not sure if I'm addressing it properly, but providing the electorate with the opportunity to vote is of course crucial to the integrity of the electoral process itself and the legitimation of the winner. So accessibility is certainly key. The question then is, which sort of provisions are we going to make, and do those provisions then support, undermine the integrity of the election? That's where my concerns with online voting arise in particular.
Okay, thank you. I mean, there are a lot of things that we're hearing in there, and kind of, we're touching on themes of security and accessibility, and I see that discussion starting to emerge in the chat. So I think maybe there are a lot of questions on security that people are interested in having answered. So I'll kind of start with that as a broad category to dive into. Bill Hewlett submitted in advance. The Canadian Communications Security Establishment issued a report to Parliament that suggested it's important to have a paper-based record for all voting. In light of this fact, why is Guelph even considering the issue of online voting? It just seems like a waste of tax money to pay for security experts for expert opinion and not listen to them when they offer advice that is way above the level of expertise of all municipal employees and elected officials. Can't we just say the issue is settled and leave it at that? And Tanya Gefert similarly said, given that anything electronic can be hacked and that small human errors can have massive consequences with regards to privacy, for instance, why would we even consider voting electronically? So I think that's the question at hand, is why this is a discussion given kind of previous discussions surrounding the issue. I think, Jennifer, you're probably best equipped to answer that.
Sure, of course. It's a very good question in the sense that, concerns around security of electronic voting isn't new. It isn't something that other levels of government haven't considered. Maybe the best way I can frame the reason that we're having this conversation is really to put all options on the table, because certainly appreciating there are those in the community who feel that the security risks for any electronic voting option are too high. That's exactly what we want to hear. There in any discussion, there's a range of perspectives, and our impetus this time really was to say, rather than the city clerk's office, intentionally taking options off the table, we want to take that context of, other levels of government's experience, the decisions that they've made, in addition to the specific perspective of our community, because there are communities where, certain voting methods are very well received and they work very well, but that may not be the case for Guelph. And so the intent here really is to make it a listening exercise. And if we do hear, as we're having the discussion today, that risk is too high to the security and integrity of our election, that's kind of the intent of this process.
Cameron?
I thought I would sort of chime in there. Yeah, times change and the ways in which people vote have changed in the past and will change in the future. So the day may be coming when online voting is fine. The discussion we can have on an ongoing basis is, whether that day has come. What trade-offs we're willing to make to have the benefits of online voting and whatnot. So I don't see a problem with sort of continuing that conversation. But I am skeptical that the day has arrived, because I don't think things have changed so much since, for example, the province reviewed online voting and reported to Parliament in 2013. I don't think we should shut down the conversation, but I do agree with the questioner that there are still significant issues that that you know, people, for example, the security issues that you know, Alex could speak to, that that would be important for people to hear and to be reiterated, so that a discussion of this sort is quite appropriate in that way.
Okay, there are also some folks who brought up kind of specific examples of things that have gone wrong related to internet voting. Susan Watson asked, can the speakers address the Dominion malfunction that happened in 2018 with internet voting in a number of municipalities? If we are evaluating using this technology and service provider, then citizens and counselors need to be fully informed about the real risk. And I'm going to throw in also a question from Ron East, which was, can you also talk about the Halifax malware attack where they held the city to ransom? Whoever wants to go first on that.
First of all, I didn't give a little speech at the beginning, so I'll just maybe give some preface first by saying that I want to thank Stephen and Jennifer for having this conversation, for initiating this conversation, because, you know, there are 444 municipalities in Ontario, and most of them, at least the ones that are considering online voting, are not having this conversation. So for me, the fact that we are all here right now is significant, and it is a good thing, and it is a positive thing. And so I've got a lot of praise for your Guelph staff for doing this. And, you know, really, the concerns that I'm expressing, I think, really transcend the Guelph case. The objections I have are not with, you know, anything to do with the Guelph staff or the Guelph Council, but rather the Municipal Elections Act itself, which I think at this point has been revealed to contain sufficiently many deficiencies in it that we are going to experience somewhere in this province eventually a democratic crisis as a result of its just lack of specificity on this issue. You know, I can't blame the authors of the Municipal Elections Act because they wrote it in the Windows 95 era. Online voting had never happened anywhere, as far as I can tell, and they were trying to kind of leave it open to the future. I get that. Maybe I could blame the provincial governments for not taking action, you know, not listening to Elections Ontario's recommendations. The chief electoral officers talked about this. We've talked about this. You know, they're using their political capital to do things like remove ranked choice ballots, which none of the clerks in Ontario that I've spoke to seem to understand the reasoning for. I don't think anybody that I've spoken to in city staff in any of the cities that I've spoken to wants that. What we do want is some standards for online voting, because we don't have any. And it just leaves, you know, poor cities to talk to vendors on their own. Some of them have the budget to retain experts, some of them don't. Some of them have the wherewithal to hold consultations, many don't. So this is kind of like a big tinderbox of some, you know, kind of like a disaster waiting to happen. And there was a disaster that happened, a literal under the legal definition emergency that did happen. And that was these election night emergencies in 2018. Now, I did a study of online voting in the 2018 municipal election. I wrote a report on that. The report is, you know, it's publicly available. Jennifer and Stephen, I've talked to them about it. They've been great. They've been just very receptive to, you know, just hearing me out. So I really appreciate that. But what happened in 2018, and maybe I should back up a step and just say that the vendor that was involved in this, Dominion, is currently the subject of some very vicious conspiracy theories in the United States. Now, I am not a fan of the online voting industry at large, and I might be one of the most vocal critics of it in Canada, but I want to make it clear that I am not aligned with what is going on in the U.S. right now. I saw a lawsuit in Georgia this morning from you know Sidney Powell. They are alleging massive voter fraud. You know, they're connecting Dominion to, you know, communist governments and stuff. This is all just nuts. Okay. So I want to just make sure that, you know, I'm not, you know, seen as sort of being a part of that. The concerns that I have, the great thing about them is they're independent of who wins the election. Okay. So, so what happened in 2018 was the vendors that were using Dominion on election night experienced what Dominion called a slowdown. I was there on election night, like actually watching, like so my grad students and I were watching, logging into the websites. I mean, we can't log into, you know, I can't vote in Hanover, Ontario, but we were trying to visit the login page and we saw that something was wrong because the login pages weren't loading. It was just spinning. And we tried to reload and we had our network proxies open and we saw the resources. Some of the resources were timing out. And we couldn't really figure out what was going on because it looked like some of it was loading and some of it wasn't. So there was obviously something just not right because we couldn't just, like, you couldn't get the login page. Now, you know, in the weeks and months that followed, you know, we got dozens of phone calls from people sort of telling us their experience. Many people just simply for practical purposes could not log in. They got halfway through the voting experience and it just stopped, or they couldn't log in to begin with. The site just did not load. So if you want to call that a slowdown, fine. I would call that as just a service outage, straight up. Now what happened was the cities that were using Dominion, many of them had no backup plan. And with all due respect to those clerks, I don't think that they really thought it was possible that the website could go down on election night. And in fact, there's some evidence of that because we were, I gave an interview in CBC in the summer before the October election saying, hey, you know, what's your disaster plan if the website goes down on election night? And we literally had some quotes from some clerks, not Guelph, but some clerks who said, well, you know, we just don't have a disaster plan. We don't know, you know, we haven't thought about that. So, I think that people don't realize necessarily how the internet actually is working underneath and all of the little things that are going on. And so if you're not thinking about those things, you're not planning for those things, then you're not ready for when the whole system goes down. Now, this was like a big deal. And so, you know, you might want to understand why that happened. Okay, why did the election websites for 40, 43 municipalities. So Dominion didn't even report the number of municipalities that were affected accurately. Like we had to go and figure it out city by city, like my grad students and I, like they tossed out a number. They wouldn't even tell us which cities they were working with. My colleague, Dr. Nicole Goodman, asked them for that information. They wouldn't tell her which cities they were working with. None of the vendors would tell us. We figured it out anyway, because it's not exactly a state secret or you know, it's in the council minutes. So we're talking about a million eligible voters in those combined number of cities. So that's a significant, I mean, there's like 9 million eligible voters in Ontario. So that's like a significant percentage of the electorate that was in cities that were impacted. Not obviously everyone on election night was using online voting. Some cities actually retain an in-person option, but many cities don't. And so online voting or telephone voting is particularly ghastly. They don't have, they've removed all in-person options. And so the folks in those cities had no choice. So what the clerks of those cities ended up doing in many cases was extending the voting period into the evening by several hours. Most of them extended it, 35 of the 43 extended it to a full 24 hours. And to do that, they invoke emergency powers under the Municipal Elections Act. So that's not normal. That's a very not normal thing to happen. I think it's extraordinary. And I think that the clerks that were affected by that were pretty upset about it. So, okay, so why did it happen? Right. So Dominion came out with a press release on the night of, And they said, well, there was an improperly set bandwidth restriction. So there's a third party provider that runs the, like, you know, that has the contributes the actual computing power and network resources that they pay. And these people set a bandwidth like throttle at 1/10 of what had been agreed upon. So everyone's trying to log on election night after dinner. This happens all around the world. This is like you see kind of like, you know, sustained kind of like pre-voting. And then on election night, boo, it goes up, right? So, I mean, that's to be expected. But when suddenly everyone was trying to descend on the websites, it just swamped it. And it just could not function because it was just overwhelmed because the bandwidth resources were not properly provisioned. Okay, so that's what Dominion said on election night. And then the question was, well, why did it's called the colocation provider, it's a cloud provider. Why did they set a 1/10 bandwidth? Like, what was the sequence of events that led to that? Now, when I spoke at the AMCTO Clerks Forum, you know, I mean, all the clerks come to that. Stephen was there. We had a nice conversation. I talked to the Dominion rep. I said, why did this happen? And he would not tell me. I sat next to him at lunch. He would not tell me what happened. Okay, fair enough. You're a business. You did something that makes you look bad and you don't want to talk about it. As a business, I get that response. But that's not good enough for a public election. Okay, so you have to understand that if you are going to bring in a vendor, and as I think Susan made the point, you're basically privatizing your election at that point. This is what we saw in Ontario, not in Guelph. Obviously, you guys voted not to use it in advance polling. Phil can talk about that night. I think Cameron, you were there too. I was there, and Susan, you were there. There's so much to this story. I've got so much I can talk about, but I think maybe I should just sort of step back at this point and, sort of leave it there. The point is that, you know, they made a mistake. They didn't just make a mistake. They didn't like, it's like if you, you know, forget to do something, okay. But if you don't even go and double check that, you know, it's common practice to test your bandwidth. So not only did they have the miscommunication about the bandwidth, they didn't test it to check. And then there were the cities who had no backup plan. So it was like a series of unfortunate events that convalesced into an election night emergency there. And so, I would like to sort of say, hey, we need to do better. You know, that was a good lesson learned. The lesson was known before it happened. I mean, we knew that this could happen. This has happened in other countries. I was in Sydney in February before the whole virus, and I testified at the state parliamentary committee on electoral matters, because they had this happen to them. On their election night, it went down. And so I was there telling them about what happened in Ontario. And I wanted them to understand that, like, this is not a fluke event. It's also, the media kept calling it a glitch. It's also not a glitch. It was a miscommunication followed by, you know, arguably improper due diligence, right? So, like, I mean, some of us saw this coming. I mean, we didn't see it exactly, but we knew that something like this could happen because nobody was paying attention to, like, the eventuality. And so we need to understand that online voting is completely different than a traditional paper and person ballot. I've been working in election, you know, research for 15 years. And so I'm telling you this as CBC says, I'm a world expert in this, okay? Whatever that means. But I'm telling you, it's not the same thing. There's fundamentally different properties and there's fundamentally different, like, things that can go wrong. You can't have a single miscommunication and have Elections Canada's entire, you know, thing go down. All of a sudden, I was giving my lecture last night in my cybersecurity course and the power went out. And my whole, all 100 students, like suddenly my lecture went out because the power went out, right? So you know, that, you know, in an Elections Canada paper ballot election, that does not happen because there's all these separate people under separate, physical conditions. They're all spread out and diversified physically across space, all right? In a online system, if there's something goes wrong, there's a single point of failure. You know, we were saying this before the election. I don't think people were taking it seriously. I hope they will now. I wish we didn't have to have an election night emergency for this point to get made, but it's a single point of failure, which means that it can go down. Or, by the way, you know, it's not robust against fraud, right? That's the other problem here. And you know, we kind of like don't want to deal with that in Canada, but they are dealing with that question in a big way in the United States right now. And we've got sucked into it. So Elections Canada is getting retweeted by the president. You know, the U.S. sneezes, Canada catches a cold. Well, I think that, you know, we cannot skirt the trust and accountability issue, the transparency issue. That's a whole nother thing. I talk about that, but I've been going for too long. So I'm going to just leave it there and say thanks. And I'll turn it back over, Dustin, if you want to call on somebody.
Yeah, thank you, Alex, or Dr. Essex. That was a really great overview of kind of what happened, and it definitely outlines a lot of the other concerns that people wanted to bring up as well. I saw a lot of nodding there from Dr. Shelley and from Jennifer. So if it's fine, I think we'll just move on. But I know that Phil wanted to jump in. So Councillor Phil Ault, you're on the line.
Thanks a lot, Dustin, and thanks also to our guests and also to Susan Watson for having facilitated a great deal of this discussion. I think it's very important. I want to restate something that Alexander Essex stated. I think that there is no malice of intent on behalf of staff in doing this, and I want to refocus what we are talking about here, which the issue is multifaceted. It is not just electronic voting. It is about accessibility, and that's fairly important. Couple of points to consider that when we're dealing with accessibility, there are a number of different approaches to accessibility. One of the most important is advanced polls, and that's something that needs to be considered. I've always jokingly said to people, vote early, vote often, although that's another issue in itself. However, the convenience of that is fairly important. The other issue is the number of polling stations that the city of Guelph can or is prepared to provide. We have seen a reduction of these in the last few elections because of cost. And my argument is that you cannot put a value on elections, that you need to spend the money that's necessary. Similarly, mail-in ballots are extremely important, as are proxies, as is assistance for those who are tremendously infirm but still wish to exercise their democratic right. It is quite possible to take a ballot box around to individuals. But historically, the intent of this was to actually increase voter turnout. And I have to say that we saw this fail. We did have a blip in increase, but I would have to say that for the tremendous exercise of electronic voting in 2018, it was not significant. We still didn't crack 50%. And for that question, whether there's any validity at all. But the biggest issue was one that came from my brother, who's a computer security nerd at Manulife, where he has said that your issue is first principles. It's not about computers. It's not about software. It's not about electronics. It's about home and domestic life. There is no assurance that a vote cast by an individual is necessarily cast by the individual who should have been the person for whom the vote was allocated. In other words, it's quite possible that dad, mom, or demon child can vote for everybody in the house, or can stand behind somebody and watch how a person is voting. So the security is not just in the electronics, it's actually in the lack of a polling place. So we have to be very careful with this on many different levels. I think that the issue of ensuring that we increase voter turnout, if that's at all possible, is one that is a bigger fish to fry. And if we really want to do that, then let's take the Australian method. Let's make it mandatory for everybody to vote, whether it's candidate A, candidate B, or none of the above. If everybody is required to vote, as it's essential in a democratic society, then we have succeeded in what we want to do. People might grumble, but we've still increased the number of people who have voted. Dustin, you were giving me a time signal. I hope I made it. You're more brutal than Mayor Guthrie.
Yeah. Sometimes you need that. Just because I want to make sure that we have an interactive discussion too, and I know other people want to jump in before we end at 9:15. So first up was Susan Watson, who wanted to speak to this.
Yeah, I just wanted to speak to the frame that Jennifer identified at the beginning about balancing the integrity and security of the election with accessibility. And I guess the red flag that goes up for me when I hear that is that as a citizen, I would take the position that the integrity and security of the election is non-negotiable. Like there is no compromise that can happen of that. And that's the approach that's been taken at the federal and the provincial level, that internet voting is not secure and that it would compromise the integrity and security of those elections. So if we start from that position, that it's non-negotiable, then how do we make our election in that context as accessible as possible? So for instance, it's my understanding that at the provincial and federal level, that returning officers will actually attend to somebody's home or hospital bed in order for them to vote, so that we actually have the secure, monitored electoral system go to the person's home. Is that gonna be more expensive? Yes, but for me, that would be the route that we need to take.
Ran out of time again, that's all. Thanks as always to our guests and to the Breezy Breakfast team of Phil Alt, Dustin Brown, Tanya Gavert, Hina Mystery, Sequoia Kim, and our many supporters who gather every Thursday at the unkind hour of 8 a.m. Music for the Breezy Breakfast Radio Hour is by Jules Germ. If you'd like to join us in one of our live Zoom sessions, or you have any questions, email me, James Gordon, at james@jamesgordon.ca. If you'd like to support the work that we do on this program, please visit patreon.com and look for Breezy Bullhorn. Thank you for any support you can lend, and as always, for listening.